Recall last week, we awaited testimony from the Russian relatives of convicted Boston Marathon bomber Zahar Zanayev. Security for their visit was high, and their stay in America came at great expense. The suspense here was whether their presence would evoke real emotion from Zahar, who has been impassive before the jury. Finally, today, at day 26 of the federal death penalty trial against Zanayev, we heard from some of those Russian relatives, testimony from aunts and cousins that seemed to move Zahar to tears. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston, this is Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. I'm David Boeri for WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Well, Kevin, the Russians came and now they've gone. What was the effect on Zahar?
The effect was, I mean, we've sat there, David, you and I have been here since jury selection began in January, and we have studied this kid looking for something that would betray emotion through all this testimony, the testimony of legs and lives being torn asunder. And today we finally saw it. You know, he never cried for the families he ruined until he cried for his own, and he did that today.
We saw him reaching for the box of tissues.
Yeah. There was one on Patama. She literally didn't offer a word. She got on the witness stand, and at first she whimpered, and then she wept, and then she hyperventilated.
She sobbed. She was trying to catch her breath. It was so affecting to see that.
And as she walked, she was led from the witness stand, having said not a word. It was then, and I was actually looking at the screen that was right on Zahar Zanayev, and he had a tissue in his hand, and he went to both eyes. It looked like he wiped at least one, if not both, cheeks. There was something there. And a little later, a second aunt got up, and after she testified, she kept it mostly together. But when she finally finished and went and sat in the front row with the other relatives, she began to weep. And when we had a break in testimony, just as he got up to leave, Zahar Zanayev turned and he blew a kiss.
I saw him going out the door, just before the door closed. He went out, he turned, he kissed, and he waved to that aunt.
Now, the jury would not have seen the kiss and the wave, but they saw the tears. They saw him. It would have been the first time he showed any emotion in front of the jury.
Yeah, I just found this terribly affecting. Three cousins and two of his aunts, and they were connected to him through his mother. They were the sisters of his mother. But life cannot be easy for them whatsoever in Dagestan now. They are the family of two internationally known and despised bombers, or largely despised bombers. And they're in Russia, which has its own security concerns with Chechens and people in the Caucasus. And so they may well be under suspicion as well. But life cannot be easy for them before they came here.
I thought it was interesting, David, that Rezat, his cousin, the first one that testified, she got up there when they were asking her, explain why did she come to testify. She said, he is my brother. They call their cousins brothers in their tradition, and that I had to come here. He's part of my family. And then unsolicited, she said, I categorically reject what he did.
There's an objection, I believe, at that point.
And she still got in. It was a tragedy. The jury heard it. But I thought that explained what that family must feel like in Dagestan. They have to be under all sorts of security attention there. They're identified with these bombers. And it seemed to me that they were actually going out of their way to say, we are not part of what he did. And it's interesting because, you know, other media accounts have talked about other relatives who still engage in conspiracy theories. The mother, Zubaydah, apparently believes that her sons were framed, that they didn't do this. And this is a family who say, no, we know he did it. Not only do we know he did it, we reject it. We don't agree with what he did.
It is striking that, in fact, nobody has come from the father's side, from Anzor's side.
These were carefully selected people.
They were ethnically Chechen. And, of course, one of the things that plays through this story is the tribalism. Mm-hmm. The Zubaydah is from people called the Avar, close to the Chechens ethnically, but different. And in fact, there was testimony here that both families looked askance at
exactly.
it. Anzor, the father's family, largely rejected Zubaydah. On her side, though, there was an aversion to the Chechens.
Yeah, they said unapologetically, they say, we marry our own. We stick with our own. You know, in America, that would be considered so un-PC to say something like that.
It's not that we in America are immune from tribalism. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if, in fact, the reaction today is, oh, he can cry for his own, mm-hmm. but shows no sympathy for Americans?
I
don't know. I wonder that.
That was my sense. That's what I got out of this. I know this was good for the defense in terms of humanizing me. He's a wonderful little boy, a kind little boy. But then if I'm a juror sitting there, I say, wait a minute. This kid sat and listened to family after family get up there and talked about Crystal Campbell's father missing her hugs, talked about Lindsay Lou's mother burying her in a bridal gown here in Boston, listening to the Richard family describe the horrific things that happened to their family at the finish line. And this kid didn't show a hint of anything. And now he's crying for his own family. If I'm a juror, I notice that. And I don't know if that necessarily makes me, you know, look at him more favorably.
Well, William Weinreb, the prosecutor, was certainly playing to the jury in that regard on cross-examination. He's talking to one of Zhihar's cousins,
Terezat.
And he talks about the fact that, oh, he summered on the sea. Mm. Now, nice spin on that, because as the defense brings out, there are 12 people in two rooms when Anzor and Zubedat bring.
Not exactly the Hamptons.
No, exactly. But he never stepped foot in Chechnya. He's summered in the sea. Very much love. Yes, yes. He grew up surrounded by loving family members. They supported him. And as he's asking these questions, I'm thinking, does she know where he's taking her?
She didn't.
She didn't, and she was enthusiastic, and then turns, well, you understand the bombing of innocent people is not an act of kindness. Objection. Sustained. And then he talks about the four, the five-year-old boy who had cried at the killing. I don't know the Lion King. It's Mufasa, the lion and the Lion King. And then says to her, you agree that someone who cries at the death of a cartoon character but remains indifferent to the death of innocent?
Objection.
That's Bill Fick, the defense attorney there. They call for a sidebar. And I noticed that in that sidebar, William Weinreb looked totally unchastened by what happened.
Absolutely. Unabashed.
It was a foul. He took it to score with the jurors.
Absolutely. And I thought it actually was very effective. I thought that was the most effective part of the prosecution today.
So I'm looking at this. It's like this great Russian novel being played out here with some of the themes we've gotten to. As the cousins and the aunts are describing the travels, the family travels, as one person says, Razat says, yeah, we thought of them like gypsies,
right,
living out of suitcases. They go to Siberia, Kyrgyzstan, Chechnya, Dagestan. It's this peripatetic movement. And I think they're laying a basis the defense wants them to lay.
And I think the second cousin, Nida Suleimanova, I thought she was very effective because she was very, very emotional on the stand. And yet, I thought she captured the utter shock and surprise of this family that when Tamerlan, the brother who was killed shortly after the marathon bombings in that shootout with the police and when Zhihar ran him over, when Tamerlan came back to visit them in 2012 and when Zubedat came back to see them, they were shocked that suddenly they were religious. This was a family that they spent so much time together as families, and they said, it sounded like the Tsarnaevs were less religious than the Suleimanovas. And yet they came back, and all of a sudden, Zubedat, a woman that dressed in flashy clothes with ostentatious jewelry, all of a sudden she's wearing a hijab. She's covering up. She's wearing plain clothes. Tamerlan is talking nothing but religion, obsessed with it, and clearly is going toward the road of jihad. And they're just looking at, wait a minute, these are the people we used to spend summers with. These are the people we spent family time with, and now all they're talking about is religion, and they're obsessed with it.
These are the people that went to America.
Yeah.
Zhihar is only 8 when they last saw him. So they don't know anything about the post-8-year-old Zhihar. But that testimony characterizes a relationship between the mother and father, which explains some of the dysfunction to come. Mm-hmm. And we've heard about it already. But I love this testimony. She was all covered up. We were all in pain. We were scared. We had never had anybody in the family like that. We cried. My older sister asked, why do you look like that? It was scary to look at her.
Yeah.
And of course, what makes this so dramatic, and here's the novel again, Kevin, she is a clothes horse.
Yeah.
She loves bright, colorful, fashionable clothes. The testimony indicated that she wore diamonds and gold, and suddenly she's back in black, and they think, they can only think that black being covered up is extremist Islamists.
That's what they associate with. And obviously what the defense wants to show here is if their own relatives, no matter how long it's been since they've seen them, how many years, if their own relatives are shocked by this transformation, why can't you be shocked and understand that this is how quickly things changed in that family and that Jahar was the last one to be piecemeal of that transformation?
Boy, you know, and so they play this recording of Tamerlan. It's recorded in Dagestan in April 30th, 2012. It's on his computer, and it has that chilling line, "I have this rage of hatred inside me." And one of their witnesses, one of the relatives, says, "I don't understand this." They are totally wigged out by that.
Yeah. They keep trying to bring this back to Tamerlan. This is what the defense is. We only hear about Jahar, and we kept seeing photo after photo of him as a small, smiling boy. And Tamerlan is always menacing in the background. But I think what was effective today, it was his own relatives who really, you could tell, they were clearly shocked by this transformation. They didn't see it coming. And that's why when this happened, they were just as surprised as everybody else.
It's all, to me, it's just, it's novel-like because everything shuts off. There is a change. They see the 8-year-old that everybody loved, that even the testimony indicated he made women better mothers. I was stunned by that. There's something they all thought about him that was exceptional. That turned off, and so much of that family switched and did it dramatically.
Right. As effective, I think, some of this testimony was for the defense, this whole idea of humanizing Jahar Tsarnaev so at least one juror will not vote for the death penalty. I'm still sitting there as a juror and saying he cried for his family today, but he didn't cry for the Richards. He didn't cry for the Campbells. He didn't cry for the Lews, and he didn't cry for the Colliers. That's something I'm going to remember when I retire to the jury room.
It's a question of whether it all hinges on that or whether there was some other testimony from the aunts and the cousins that might have opened the jury up. We'll see. It's the end of day 26 from the Bulkley Federal Courthouse. This is Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. For WBUR, I'm David Boeri.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Join us again tomorrow.
Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial, is a co-production of WBUR and the Boston Globe. New episodes of the podcast will be released multiple times a week throughout the trial after court lets out for the day. You can listen at WBUR.org and at BostonGlobe.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where new episodes will appear as soon as they're released. Go to the podcast section of iTunes and search Finish Line to subscribe. Thanks for listening.